Welcome to The Scrub Life, a podcast for and about the incredible profession of surgical technology. I'm Chris Blevins, and our mission at The Scrub Life is to educate the public about surgical technology. Each episode dives into the wonderful world of surgery, where we inform and hopefully entertain our listeners while interviewing amazing individuals within the field and presenting the hot topics everyone wants to know more about. Certified surgical technologists are an integral part of the sterile team that cares for patients in the operating room. Learn more about this exciting field, the immense effort that goes into educating future CSTs, and how you too can become a ninja of the OR. Now, without further ado, here's the latest episode of The Scrub Life. Hey everyone, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Scrub Life podcast. My name is Chris Blevins, and I'm really excited for you to hear this episode. Many of you should have already received a job task analysis survey from the National Board of Surgical Technologists and Surgical First Assists. The NBSTSA is not the email that this survey may have come from. I believe it came from steve.spencer@psionline.com. So make sure you check your junk mail. Who knows where it could have gone. I also want you to know that this particular survey is being sent to every CST in the nation, and it's being done so in batches of about 20,000. So if you haven't received it yet, be patient. It's coming. Not only is this survey going out to CSTs, it's also going out to CSFAs, and your opinion really does matter. So please listen to this episode. We're going to talk a lot about the process behind the questionnaire, why it matters, and how you can actually have a voice in our incredible profession. So without delay, here are my special guests and my podcast partner in crime, and let's get started. This is Chris and Stephanie, and today we are really excited to have two pretty amazing guests on our podcast. First, I'd like to introduce Emily Runyons. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh my gosh. My pleasure. Absolutely. And then of course, our second guest is Mr. Dave Blevins. Hello, sir.
No relation.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
No relation.
No relation.
No relation.
No. We're definitely getting together today, specifically about the NBSTSA job task analysis survey that has been distributed and continues to be distributed to CSTs all over the nation. The reason that we have Emily and Dave on is because they were both a part of kind of the task force, if you will, that created this. And so I think they can provide us a lot of insight because already just day two of the disbursement, there's a lot of preconceived notions. There's a lot of misinformation out there. We've already had the social media give their opinion. And so we thought it would be very appropriate to kind of clear up all of that and get it right from the people who helped create that stuff. But before we get into that, I always want people to get to know both of you just personally. I'm really curious how people get into the world of surgical technology to begin with. Anybody ever grows up and is like, I'm going to be a CST. So ladies first, you know, Emily, will you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Where you're at, what to do, and how in the hell you got into surgery to begin.
Sure. It's a little bit of a boring but interesting background. I graduated high school in 2003 here in Buffalo, New York, and I had went for 2 years to we have like a BOCES program where you can train to be all these different things, and one of them was nursing. So I had spent 2 years technically already in nursing school and was supposed to come out with my CNA, but a month before I graduated, they dropped it. So we weren't able to sit for our exam. It was awful.
Tears.
I know. So I decided to go to nursing school at Niagara County Community College, but my real major was college basketball. I played 2 years of basketball and hated every single day of nursing. So I dropped out and I didn't want to waste all my credits. So my basketball coach actually suggested that I go take the surgical technology program because I really just loved the OR. I went 2 years there and got my associate's degree in surgical technology. And then I got a job right out of school at Sisters Hospital in Buffalo. And I worked in labor and delivery. And I still work there to this day. I actually worked a little bit later this afternoon. And in between there, I started working at the college because my boss, Gemma Fournier, called me up and was desperate for a clinical instructor. And I thought it was a joke because I was not a good student at all. And so I started teaching clinicals for her. About a year later, I moved into the lab portion of it. Actually left kind of everything together and went and worked for what was then called Units. It's now called Connect Life. It was Upstate New York Transplant Services. Mm-hmm. And we did all the tissue donation from the deceased and all the recovery. And it was amazing. I tried to do some office work in between there and that didn't work out because, you know, I'm not an office kind of person.
Any of us are, even as educators, I don't think we are.
It was the longest 5 months of my life just sitting there in a surgery office waiting. So after that, I went back and got my bachelor's in healthcare administration from Ashford University in San Diego because I knew I needed to do something just to continue on the ladder.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't afford my student loans. And so I went and got a master's.
Good old deferment.
Right? It's been in a deferment for like 3 years. It was great. I got that in education and adult training, knowing that I fell in love with teaching and I needed to get it to move forward in teaching.
Yeah.
So I graduated with my master's from the University of Phoenix in 2020 during the pandemic. And my student loans are still in deferment, which is amazing. So it's working out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, you are heavily involved in the New York AST State Assembly. What's your role there?
I am currently the state president. I've been the president since 2009, and I started in 2015. So I've been super involved there, moved right up the ladder really quick because I'm a busybody. In 2021, I got asked to join the NBSTSA Exam Review Committee, which is the people who kind of help create, develop, moderate the certification exam. And then this year, I was asked to join the Job Analysis Committee.
Awesome.
Like people sides of the exam.
Hence the reason why you're on this podcast.
Yes.
And Emily, tell everybody what wonderful award that you received at conference this year.
I just got awarded the President's Award from President Kevin Craycraft. I was extremely shocked and humbled to get it because I believe that it is a big deal to fight all these trolls, as we are calling them, on social media because our job in the OR is not as toxic as everybody on Facebook makes it to seem.
I love
going to my job every day. And I think the culture of social media just needs to change. And I could go on hours and hours about that alone.
Right. We may have another.
We may.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. And of course, we'll dive here into the NBSTSA stuff. But Mr. Blevins, yes. It's your turn.
Yes. So my story with surgical technology, it's not completely exciting. I don't have any noble reasons as to why I chose this career path. It wasn't because, I want to help people. I can't say that. I found my earlier years, I found myself working in retail security. And I was working in warehouses and I was unloading trucks and loading trucks and 100-degree warehouses and stuff like that. I was like, oh, come on, man, I got to do something with my life. This is not what I want to do.
I have to do something with air conditioning.
Yes. You know, that would have been good. So I decided to enroll in the local surgical technology program. That was in 2003 that I got enrolled in that and did my associate's degree there. started working in the hospital in 2005. I worked largely for the Mercy Health System here in Cincinnati and a couple other smaller surgery centers. I've done focused mostly in plastic surgery and orthopedics over the course of my career. I eventually went on to get my surgical assisting certificate, which was a good move, and started teaching in 2014, moved away from the full-time clinical side into the education role, which I really enjoyed doing.
How'd you get wrangled in King?
Well, my surgical assisting instructor, Brenda Pointer, she actually kind of randomly reached out to me one day and said, hey, would you ever be interested in teaching? We're going to have a position coming open. Like, no, but maybe. And so I applied for the job and I somehow got the job. It was a real blessing. So I'm glad I did it. From there, you know, I really took an interest in anything that's going to help further our profession. It's nothing that I would have ever thought that I would do in the past. And because I'd also been misguided by some of the negative opinions that I've heard from those in the community. And once I started to get more involved with upper level of the AST and the NB, I realized that these are really good organizations. We have a really strong support system, and it's a really good thing to be involved with. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
And you're talk about your national work. You're stuck with me a lot.
Yes. Yeah, so I work on the AST's Education and Professional Standards Committee. I've been on that for, I think, 4 years now. So we do a lot of work with approving continuing education programs. We help facilitate the educators conference and a lot of fun stuff.
Good group. It's fun.
Very good.
Very cool. Well, thank you both for being here today. I want to begin by, how did you guys selected for this committee for the NB job task analysis? How did that kind of come about? And then talk a little bit about that initial meeting that you all had back in, was that March, I think? I would imagine there's a lot of behind the scenes work that happened, you know, to get this task analysis survey out that we just experienced the other day.
Sure. So my personal experience getting involved with the NB was going to conferences and going up to the NB booth and talking with Ben Price and Linda Vance and the other board members that are there and just telling them that you want to get involved. And the simplest thing to do is go on their website and sign a consent to serve, showing that you are willing to volunteer to do any of these jobs that they have.
Before we get too far into that, tell people who maybe don't understand who Ben Price is and who Linda is. I don't know that everybody that's listening may have a good understanding of the leadership at NB.
Sure. So the NB is, the CEO is Ben Price, who is always at the conferences. And then Linda Vance is his right hand. Let me find her official title. The meetings and marketing manager is her official title, but she's always around helping and running everything. And then the NB is made up of a board, just like AST is. And currently, Jeff Bidwell is the president, Gemma Fournier's the vice president. I know Libby McCray's on there. I'm forgetting a bunch of people, Michelle Gay, you know, familiar faces from the AST side have now moved on to the NB side.
So when you guys met, Dave, for the first time in, was that Missouri? Kansas? Can't remember.
Kansas City.
It was Kansas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. How did you all even start the process? What was that initial meeting like?
So it started even before we met. So there was an additional, a preliminary survey sent out to everyone who's going to be involved with the meeting to compile all of what we consider our current job tasks within our roles. We have a group for the CSFAs and for the CSTs, and they kind of broke us off into different groups. Even before we got there, we compiled a list of hundreds of job tasks. And when we got there, we collectively whittled things down, talked about, you know, is this really something that is going to be putting onto this survey? Is this something that we think that should be included for the masses to evaluate also?
So then once you guys completed that initial information, how many people were involved in that, by the way? Was it a big group?
Between the CSTs and the CSFAs, there was just over 20 of us. And like Dave said, we both got split into separate rooms. Dave, you were on the CSFA side, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, so we're in two completely separate rooms going through all of our hundreds of tasks. And we all had to look at each other's tasks and decide, is this something that the general public would do, or is this really job specific for, or what specialty you do?
Right. And I would think that there's a lot of facility specific stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, you may have the more like ancillary tasks when you're at a smaller facility than you would at like a large trauma hospital. Also, absolutely. I think one of the big complaints is always about the regionality of questions, right? Stephanie, I'm sure that's when you gripe about things, that's your biggest gripe, isn't it?
Yes, the regionally specific questions and how that instrumentation can be called different things in different places. And because I've had students that have had questions that I've never even heard of the answers that were on the test. I kind of feel like that those regionally specific things kind of rear their heads on that test sometimes.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because that's more of an ERC thing that we go through and look at each question and try to say, yeah, the person right out of school is not going to know the answer to that. Let's get rid of it. Let's replace it with something else.
And but what is ERC again?
Just the exam review committee for
right.
One of the things on the CST side is that we noticed that a lot of changes happened with COVID. People's job tasks increased. So now with this survey, we really need to know, is this something that is stuck around, or was this just temporary?
We in the Education and Professional Standards Committee had a huge conversation about that. In fact, wrote some position statements on ancillary jobs that we felt like CSTs could do outside of the operating room. Dave and I were both really involved in that as well. And it's going to be interesting, absolutely, I think, to see trends. If since now they've like, oh, guess what? CST can do this. Now are we stuck doing it? Or should I say, we have the opportunity to do it?
We have the privilege of doing it.
That's right. Yes. Great privilege to go to the floor and wipe things. Yeah. So, it's crazy.
Well, Emily and Dave, one of the things that's popping up in the is that they don't want to do this survey because they're not getting paid to do it. Did you guys get paid to go and spend all of this time, many hours, weekends away from your families, you know, from doing the things that you want to do? Were you compensated to do this?
No, this was completely volunteer work. So we took about 3 days out of our lives to go to another state to put all this together, really for the good of the people coming up in the profession. So there was no real gain for us.
3 days was the meeting. I was gone for 5 days with travel because there is no easy way to get from Buffalo to Kansas. So I was away from my husband and 3 kids on a busy weekend for 5 days for free.
Right. Well, and I think that's the misconception that a lot of people, not only with these committees, but AST in general, they think that, oh, they're up there in these highfalutin places getting paid all this money to do these things. And that's not accurate. You know, these are voluntary positions that we do to give back to our profession. And
right.
I think that's what the general population needs to know.
Right.
They think we're corporate fat cats and we are just people like they are, everyday people who still scrub and still deal with the same thing they deal with every day.
I think another misconception wrapped around all of this is that there's not communication between the three-headed beast, if you will. But, you know, I've referred to it that way. NB, AST, ARC, there is a lot of overlap. And there were several names you guys have mentioned already that have been involved in both committees on a state level, a national level through AST, and are now working with the NB. And last night I talked to Kevin Craycraft. I wanted his opinion about what we were going to talk about today. And he really explained how involved they are in they being AST in this job task analysis. In fact, he was heavily involved in the appointment of those people who were chosen to come and talk about the information that's on there. And so he wanted me to be able to really explain that, you know, there is a ton of communication between the three entities, and that they also, there's a lot of stuff that happens kind of behind the curtain and in the background. And I think the thing that I would ask the most of right now is just more transparency. Because if we were more open about the processes that go behind all of these surveys and the decisions that are made, then maybe we wouldn't have so many people griping about things that they don't know anything about. Absolutely. So one of the suggestions from Kevin Craycraft was that the NB consider having two different exams. And I wanted your opinions on this. He felt like one exam should be for entry-level surgical technology graduates. And one of the comments that he made was that how are we supposed to base their skill set on a job task analysis for a job they haven't even gotten into yet? And then another example, he said the second form should be for those CSTs who are practicing who have to then recertify for some reason. Because you would think that their level of expertise and experience would be completely different from our new graduates. I thought that was really interesting. He said he has opened that door prior to talking to me about it, obviously. But I wanted your opinion on that as well, especially as educators. What do you think about that?
I think it's an interesting idea. Because I know there's always been some debate over some of the exam questions. You know, are these really entry-level questions? Would a brand new surgical tech who's taking this test, would they know this? Or is this something that you would learn after you have been scrubbing hearts for a few years? So maybe there's something to that. Maybe there needs to be multiple tiers to our certification. I don't know. Maybe that's not the best idea, but it's an interesting idea.
I get it. I know somebody who graduated 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago now, who just had to retake the test. And didn't do as great as you would expect them to for working in the field. So I think having that entry-level test, or should be, and that's, once again, kind of our job is to weed out those non-entry-level questions on the ERC side that we have been striving to do based on complaints. And
always based on complaints, right?
Correct.
Nobody ever wants to go, Emily, you're doing such a good, damn good job writing this question. We love every question you make. This never happens.
I don't know. I think entry level is okay for right now. I think maybe if there was some sort of like advancement in your profession, that maybe you should consider a higher level test. But I think we have a while to get there. Yeah.
That was great. I love the fact that he was so open about it. You know, we talked about a lot of things on the phone, but the fact that he was willing to kind of even put that out there, I thought was really interesting. You know, we got to think outside the box. Correct. Otherwise, things don't change. And in medicine, things are changing constantly. So why we as an organization should be as well.
You can't just whip out a new test, you know, just a couple of days.
Right.
Well, which is why I like that they do put out new tests every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And the job analysis is done every 5 years. So it is staying relatively current, because it is going to take us about a year, year and a half to get that new test prepared after the results from this job analysis. So it really is going to start to change with what we get back from the feedback.
So let's talk about the actual job task analysis, because it's broken into four different sections. For those of you who have not received this survey yet, it's coming. Emily, you stated that it's coming in waves, right?
Yes.
Distribution wise.
Yes.
Well, so, and if you haven't gotten it, poor Steve Spencer. I'm going to apologize now. I don't even know you, but I'm about to give your email out. So sorry. Yeah. So steve.spencer@psionline.com. If you do have technical difficulties with the survey, or you haven't received it in the next week or so, reach out to him, because I think the more data that is accumulated, the better. But as far as the data goes, there were four sections, and the first one was demographics. And I thought that that was great. You know, the best question on that was, does your facility have a clinical ladder for advancement? Or why is that included? I would think that there's maybe a bigger picture to that particular question than just the exam, right?
Dave, did you talk about it on your side?
No, we really did not have a lot of discussion on the CSFA side. But I think it's just important for the, we just want to see what's going on nationally, how most hospitals are doing the structure of the CST position in their facilities and CSFA positions.
We talked about it just to see if having that CST title versus somebody who was grandfathered in advanced them in their clinical ladder. So we were just curious to see how many places actually have it, implement it, versus not. It's just one of those interesting facts to see for the future.
Absolutely. And I think that we're seeing it in our area of the woods, that there are more facilities that are actually creating those clinical ladders for CSTs, board runners, and you know, the logistical side of it, inventory analysis, and then, you know, heading up the other sterile core. And those are just a couple of things that I'm seeing at two facilities here. So it's nice to have that, because I don't think there's always been a ladder for RNs and not necessarily for CSTs. And so I'm interested to see what the answers are to that one. The second section was the actual task performed as a CST. And that is then broken into perioperative, ancillary, and basic sciences. 91 tasks. That's a lot. What did you guys narrow that down from? A lot, I would think.
Several hundred. Yeah, I don't remember exactly, but there were more than that. We scratched a lot of it.
One of the things that your rating, so it's at 0 to 5 rating for importance of the task and then frequency, and 5 being like critically important, and then in frequency, like do it very often. And I will tell you, as I'm sitting there doing this, every single task, I was like, that's very important. That's incredibly important. Like, I wanted to rate every single thing, because then as an educator, I'm like, if you don't do that right, then, you know, that messes up X, Y, and Z. And I have yet to hit 0. I've yet to hit 1. And so I don't know. That's a struggle for me. I don't know if it's going to be a struggle for anybody else. Do you guys relate to that at all?
Yeah. So I went through when I was testing it. I just got my real one last night. But when I was testing it, I found myself answering critically important for a lot of things. And I don't know if that's because we talked a lot about it as a group too, or if it's really just that's how I see it, is that important, because that's what we're basing, you know, our testing off of. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's literally the educator in us. And then obviously I was thinking, well, I teach that every daggum day in lab, right? I teach that. You can be completely confidential. You don't have to give all of your contact information, but I went ahead and gave mine. So if you see one that comes in that's all 5s for everything, that's mine. Everything is very, very important. No, I thought that was really interesting. And then I love the fact that at the conclusion, you have each section, you have the ability to just free type and really give like an opinion in regards to that particular area of content. And I think that is so incredibly important, because it's one of the gripes, right? Is that you don't get it the opportunity to say something, or your opinion doesn't matter. I just feel like in this particular survey, that couldn't be further from the truth.
Right. I can't wait to go back in August and just start to read all of these comments. Like, I want to know what you think is not included, that is included. And I want to see what the trends are. And I want to see if you gave 0s for something, if it was not important, is that something that as educators we're overlooking? And I want to say, not everybody in the room that developed these were educators. It is split like 50-50. There are just CSTs who work.
Emily, when you get to August, tell us how are you planning to analyze this data? Do you all have a program that's going to analyze part of the data for you? Or what is your process?
I actually don't know the process for this yet. We have psychometricians that work with us from PSI. So it's kind of their job to put all the information from these together and compile it. And then we will find out what information was resulted and essentially go back to the current task list that is from NBSTSA and compare it and see where changes need to be made. But I don't even 100% fully understand that process yet, because we're not there.
That's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that looks, especially when you're surveying people from across the country, because I know that trends happen in different parts of the country differently. It'll be interesting to see how that information comes down.
Well, we'll really need like a follow-up to this.
Right, exactly.
How long is the survey open to be taken if y'all are meeting again in August?
That's a great question.
I believe July 17th was the date that was requested to submit it.
So those of you who are CSTs and CSFAs, Dave, are they going to get both job task analysis?
That's a great question. I only received the CSFA survey so far. Maybe I'll get the other one, but for now, I've only received one.
We're going to take a break because the next thing I want to talk about is the social media commenting. We're not going to have a podcast without addressing kind of that and the misnomers that are out there. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. House isn't burnt down. Kids aren't destroyed. Luna's fine. Mr. Blevin, so everybody's good. So what I want to talk about is that we as a profession need to come together. Nothing's ever going to be perfect. But if we don't have that one solid voice, then once again, we're never going to have a seat at the table. And there are so many important issues that are happening right now in the world of surgical technology, to include the lack of pay, which we'll preach about later. Right. And also just that there is a national shortage of CSDs, which is great for those of us who are educators, but there's a reason why there's a shortage. And so I get it. Like, people are bitter, overworked, underpaid, exhausted. But let's talk a little bit about how to be a part of the solution instead of being a part of the social media problem. Ms. Austin, you want to take it over?
Sure. That is one of the things that I have been trying to get across to a lot of people in this area, is that nothing's going to change in our profession until we come together as a group. And they always want to say, well, the nurses get everything. There's a reason for that. When the nurses speak, it's the entire country of nurses that are speaking together. They come together, they support each other, they don't backbite and cut each other down. For the most part, there's always going to be rogue people out there. However, that has given them that larger seat at the table, as Chris said. And we as surgical technologists, go look on the Surg Tech Facebook page if you don't believe me. All that you see are people, students coming in asking, should I do this or should I do nursing? And surgical technologists who are on this page are guiding students to go to nursing. How are you ever going to get enough help in your hospitals or gain the respect of other professions if we as a group are acting this way on social media? So, Dave, what do you think? What have you seen?
Yeah, as one of the moderators of that page, I see that all the time. It's a lot of negativity, unfortunately. You know, but I think the negativity I think it stems from people that they just don't know that they do have a voice and they can actually put their voice out there in a positive way rather than, I mean, I understand that everyone has some concerns about the way things may be going at their hospital or with the profession in general, but there are better avenues to take your voice and project it somewhere else. There's better ways to do it.
Right. Yes, there are. And getting involved is one of the most important avenues, I believe, to that change and to changing the negativity and the mindset of our profession. Emily, what are some ways that people can get involved?
So it's funny that you just mentioned this about ways to get involved. Back in February on that Surg Tech page, I created a poll to see how many people on that page out of the, what is there, like 90,000 people on that page now, only 122 people answered my question, if you were actively involved with AST on the state or the national side. And out of those 122 people, 64% of people said that they weren't involved in either. And one negative comment is said that they are involuntary giving up money to them. That's not productive. The only way to make these changes is to get involved at the state and national level. Even if you don't want to commit to like a term, ask your state how you can volunteer with them to help make a difference. You can go volunteer on different committees for AST. You can volunteer your time with NB like Dave and I are. Even just like getting in communication with your state assemblies can make the biggest difference and change in what is happening locally to you. They're your best friend that nobody seems to use, or we're a big resource for you guys and nobody seems to reach out and use us for help or guidance or anything.
Right.
What about the live CEs? Both of you, Stephanie Austin, you're the vice president of the Tennessee yes. State Assembly. Emily, you're the president of the New York State Assembly. Let's clarify, since we're here together, why having live CEs, or what they call advanced CEs, is critical not just to your education, but also to your state, right?
Yeah. So we need more involvement at our actual conferences. So the live CEs are forcing our members to come out and work with us, not only get their education, but see what we're doing on the flip side of everything when we are not posting on Facebook or having a live conference. There's so much going on behind scenes that we need to work on together to make change. And if you come, you'll be able to see and hear about what changes we are trying to do for our state.
That's like here in Tennessee, you know, one of the big things that has been discussed with the board is that we need to get involved in the communities. And a lot of people ask, well, why do I need to volunteer in the communities? Well, it is going to bring to the forefront the profession. People see you out there picking up trash or volunteering at a homeless shelter or at an animal shelter or things like that, and you are representing the profession, then that's going to bring the profession more to the forefront. And it's going to allow younger kids to say, oh, well, what is surgical technology? And then they may go out and research it and end up being that kid that says, I want to be a CST when I grow up. The only people that do that now are our kids. And my kids have no interest, as they call it, in the spaghetti.
That's the whole, it's my biggest probably soapbox, is that nobody knows who the hell we are or what we do.
Right. Exactly.
At all.
And then the people that do come on and look at our Facebook page, what do they see? What do they see? You see the negativity. Oops. You see the people guiding people to other professions. And it's not a cohesive group. And there's no positivity about the profession on there. So how are you going to get more help? All you're complaining about not having enough help and not having better pay is an indirect reflection of what happens in social media and what happens in, you know, when you're out in the public spewing the same type of negativity about the profession.
It's so toxic. So kind of off topic, years ago, I almost got fired from my hospital for something that happened on social media that wasn't even taking place at my hospital. It was at one of my clinical sites, but because it said that I worked at this hospital, they took it as I could tarnish their name and they wanted to fire me for it. And I had no idea. As you're making these comments on these social media pages, think about that. Your site can go back and think that you are talking negatively about them. If it says that you work there, they technically have the right to fire you under your contracts. You know, take that with a grain of salt. Think about what you're posting. Make it conscious. All these travel sites, people looking for recommendations on the hospital, if they go back and find your name and you're associated with it, and you're saying that the hospital sucks, you know, work sucks, my manager sucks, all this kind of stuff, they're not going to want to come work for you. And that's going to leave you shorthanded too. So really consider you as a brand for where you work too, even if it is the worst. Not everybody has a great facility that they work at, but it's not going to get better if your name and negativity is associated with it.
And Emily, you just made a very good point. You're representing your own brand. It's not that you're representing the profession. You are representing yourself negatively. And there are a lot of people in this world. I know that when I have to hire new instructors or clinical evaluators or whatever I'm looking for, if I see that kind of negativity on their Facebook, I'm not going to hire them. I don't want that kind of negativity in my classroom. Why would I hire it to come and work here?
I actually probably shouldn't admit this, but I look up all my students on social media and kind of incorporate it into when I'm teaching in professionalism. And a lot of them are shocked that I see some of the things that I see and call them out on. And it really took me almost getting fired to step back and analyze what I market myself as. And I think that needs to be a huge lesson for a lot of people out there. You can't just be a keyboard hero. You got to be a real life hero.
Kevin Craycroft last night was talking about, he called them telephone bullies. Those people. And I thought, I've never heard that one, but you know, the people that are, as long as there's that distance in between you, they will talk crap and they get really bold. But the second they're in front of you, they're just the sweetest little kittens ever. Yeah, it's very true. And we have a massively strict no cell phone at clinical policy.
Right.
Because I've literally seen people taking selfies in the operating room and there's their badge and there's patient stuff in the background or there's they're not doing themselves any favors. It's just like the profile pictures that are maybe not the most becoming, and then you want to go get a job when you're half naked on Facebook.
Right.
Had conversations with students too.
Yeah, and I don't want people to think that this whole segment is about bashing the, as we call them, the trolls on Facebook. It's not that. To make people aware of the perception that it gives the profession and that it gives the individual as a member of this profession, when they go to look for other jobs, a lot of people think that what happens on social media is totally separate from their life. And it's not any longer.
There are people hired specifically to do that, to search you and all of your stuff.
Yes, these bigger corporations, they do that. They hire somebody just to search social media for new hires to see what they're posting, what they're saying about their profession and people in their profession. And that's just, it's very, very discouraging as a member of the profession to go online and to see the type of negativity that we're seeing today.
Yeah.
Well, so let's end on a good note. Right.
Let's do that.
If someone really does feel like they want to be involved, mm-hmm. either state or national, whatever AST and BSTSA, there's so many different opportunities. And I think Dave can also mention this, that there are ways to be involved without having to be the speaker, right? And to stand on a podium.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, absolutely. So I think the first step is to reach out to your state level, and then also go to NBSTSA website and AST's website and fill out the consent to serve. Because how your name even gets to those people who are in a decision-making position, right?
And if you can't figure out how to do it, go to the Scrub Off Podcast website and find my email address. It's on there. Send me an email. I'm more than happy to hook you up with the people that you need to be able to get involved. And if you're in Tennessee, I'm the person you need to talk to anyway, you know, so just email me. I don't mind at all to come out and to help and to guide you in a direction that, you know, that would be suitable for you. Everybody's not suited to do the same thing. If they did, we wouldn't have all the different committees.
And I think that also a really good addition to that is that even if you don't know how you can help, just put yourself out there and have the conversations. It's really, there are a whole bunch of great people who really care. Voluntary.
It is. And it's all voluntary. Yeah. And this is a fantastic profession. It is. And we do a lot of good in the hospitals and for our patients. And the negativity really needs to stop so that we can be effective. And but you want to talk about low pay. We talked about that a while ago. This goes hand in hand. Until we gain the respect of other professions and the leaders of the hospital, that pay is not going to increase. And so that's where we have to start. We have to start by gaining that respect.
I always say strength in numbers. And, you know, the more positive we can be, even if it's not the most positive situation, the better off we will be because we'll be stronger together.
Well, Dave, I'm going to let you have your final comment. Why should people fill out this job task analysis survey? You put something out there on to encouraging, and here's your opportunity to say it as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, the purpose of this is so we can just make sure that the examinations are relevant to current clinical practice. So, and I think it's really good for maybe newer graduates from surgical tech programs who are more familiar with the exam content. Maybe, you know, you took the test and you realize, hey, this is not what I do at clinicals. This is not what I do in my new job. This is just crazy. Well, this is what this is all about. This is the chance for you to say, no, this is not really important for me as a surgical tech. And it may not be important for surgical techs on a large scale. That's why we're doing this nationally, to get that information so we can make things more relevant. So this is absolutely the opportunity for people to speak about what their opinion is. So there is always the opportunity to do that. You just have to put your voice in the right direction.
That's awesome. And Emily, final words for not just this, but the exam and everything that you've been seeing online.
I really, really hope that people take the chance to do the survey, even if you weren't going to do it before, even if you were going to delete the email, go back into your delete file, pull it out and do it. Because without everybody, no matter who you are, even if you fill it out halfway, fun fact, you can go open up the same browser that you opened it up in and continue where you left off. So don't forget about that. But I really just hope that everybody can do it, because the members that are on your job analysis committee are really committed to trying to make a difference for not only our current, but our future. And we want to make this profession grow strong and bigger and better every single day. So even if you don't feel like you're valued, we really, really, really appreciate how much effort and time you're going to give us by doing this survey.
We really, really appreciate both of you spending your time today with us and really talking about these things and the process behind that link that everyone got in their email. Just honestly, thank you so much for being here with us today. We're really grateful for that and for all the work you do.
And keep us updated. We probably need to do a follow-up after you do your analysis to see how that all went.
See what we can do.
Sure.
Yes.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. If you have not received the survey by the time you've listened to this episode, don't worry. This weekend, you should see floating about on social media two QR codes. One QR is to the CST job task analysis survey, and the other is specifically for the CSFA. So please watch your email. Also watch social media for those QR codes, but your voice really does matter. And I hope after listening to this episode, you understand why.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life Podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Scrub Life Podcast. Show notes for this episode, as well as past episodes, our contact information, and the virtual suggestion box can be found at our webpage, thescrublifepodcast.com. This has been Chris Blevins and Stephanie Austin with the Scrub Life Podcast. Until next time, be safe, support each other, and stay sterile.